In the 60s, it was a tool that people could use for visual effects like light shows, which is probably where most people saw lasers. I think I first saw them at a Who pop concert.
To see holograms, then you needed the laser, and the general public were literally awestruck. It was a sublime experience.
Curious enough, the very first application of lasers, I think commercially, was a sterile way of drilling the holes in the nipples of baby bottles.
You can make lasers from optical fibers, 10 kilowatts, that can cut pieces of metal very precisely. It's amazing how far we've gone.
This is the sound of a machine that's using a laser to engrave tiny coded marks inside the glass of little medicine bottles, which you can hear shunting around the conveyor belt. Now, unlike conventional engraving, the extremely short pulse of laser light marks the bottle without scratching or heating or any risk of cracking, and only a laser can do this. This is just one of an extraordinary range of applications in this exhibition hall in Brussels, the venue for Photonics Europe, the annual conference dedicated to advances in laser science. It's a special year for this conference because it's the golden anniversary of the invention of the laser. And over here is a giant display commemorating the key developments in lasers over the past 50 years and some of the people who made them possible. And I'm joined now by Eugene Arthurs, who is head of SPIE, the international industry body that's putting on these events this week. So how significant is this anniversary?
We think it's rather important. The laser is one of the more exciting developments over the last century in science, and really, prior to the laser, optics was considered a sleepy backwater of physics. Nothing was happening. It was all known. It was all 19th century stuff. And then the laser was invented, and optics really flourished after that as the laser moved into many applications, made a lot of things possible that weren't possible before. And that explosion is still continuing.
An explosion that's made possible by something called the stimulated emission of radiation, first defined by who else? Albert Einstein in 1917. Just as materials can absorb light, he said, some could also, under certain conditions, amplify it, put energy in, shine the right kind of light onto it, and out will come more light. Decades passed before the idea became a practical proposition, and not at first using light. Charles Townes, working at Columbia University in New York in the 1950s, invented something he called the maser, short for microwave amplification by the stimulated emission of radiation. It was used as a sensitive amplifier in radar and radio astronomy. The next step was to use light. Townes roped in his friend, colleague and brother-in-law, Arthur Shaulow, who knew a lot about optics and worked at Bell Laboratories. And on the 15th of December 1958, the journal Physical Review Letters published their landmark paper outlining the principle of the optical maser. If it could be made to work, it would produce the holy grail of optics, a pure beam of coherent light. White light is actually a mixture of different colours, different wavelengths, just as white noise like this is a mixture of many different sound frequencies. Coherent light is a single precise wavelength, perfectly in phase, like a pure tone in sound. Prior to the laser, that couldn't be done with light, and that was important because only coherent light can be precisely controlled. Ordinary light splits and spreads as it passes through optical equipment. And Townes and Shaulow realised that using stimulated emission could produce that precisely tuned light, a single pure colour. Their paper started a race to see who could make one work, but Townes wasn't one of the runners, as he explains in this oral history recorded 25 years later for the American Institute of Physics. He'd been appointed to the Institute of Defense Analysis in Washington, an offer he felt he couldn't refuse, though he was reluctant to leave Columbia.
I also hated to leave the laser work, but I felt, well, it was just terribly boring to go to Washington. As a matter of fact, I remember Walter Bratton urging me, oh, don't do that, you must build a laser. I felt the laser was really in the bag, as obvious it could be built, and it just wasn't critical for me to build one. And I'd like to build one first, but there'll be more important things.
But the laser was far from in the bag.